somehow I hear this parable, the story that Jesus tells in Matthew 25 as addressing us as a congregation. What's in your oil lamp? What's the language and the symbolism of this story that seems fairly straightforward? And yet, as we know, as we have learned time after time, that there is deep significance and symbolism in the midst of it. Our opening hymn, God Is With Silent Hearts, talked about the importance of the community of faith, learning how to travel the road, the complex, the varied, almost even contradictory road of life. Traveling with each other through the celebrations of joy at a baby's birth, the depths of sorrow at a loved one's death, and everything in between. A few weeks ago, I had on a Saturday a funeral in the morning at 10, along with the burial and having to make the way back to the church here for a wedding 20 minutes later after I returned. Trying to be authentic to the observance of both of those, the support of those who were mourning the passing of a loved one suddenly by a heart attack, as well as joining with the joy of much, much months of preparation for the public demonstration and testimony of love. Such commingling of life is always pressed upon each of us. Just this week, in the evening of Monday, celebrating with a couple whose firstborn has come, the joy, the elation, the excitement, the fear. What happens when we get home with this baby? And the very next day, supporting, encouraging, and praying with someone who's received bad news. The treatment's not working. It is into this space and into this communal living that this text speaks, that God is trying to break a word open. A word open about who we are as a congregation, who we are as the people who have decided, some haltingly, some perhaps more maturely, to follow the way of Jesus. What is the word to us today? And it is appropriate that we consider this particular text because we're told that Jesus is speaking to his disciples. This is not a text that is addressed to the wider public, as it were. It's addressed to those who have been following, those who are wrestling with what it means to see and to do that which their leader, their master, their Lord has done. How he sees the world, how he sees people, how he understands God at work, and to do that. He is talking to those who are wrestling with that. And Jesus is being absolutely honest, brutally honest, about the reality of that community of those who have gathered around him. He has done it repeatedly. He has used this contrast of wise and foolish before. And so he speaks as Jesus usually does, drawing from an ordinary example that everybody who heard him would have known well. A wedding ceremony. Palestinian wedding ceremonies had their own particular culture, their own particular features. The weddings often took place at night. There was no specific invitation with RSVP stating a particular time. The wedding started when all the important people got there. That's how it was. What is being described is those who were of marriageable age, the women would form a procession with lights so that when the groom, usually either in his own village or a very nearby village, would go to fetch the bride, and come accompanied with all the chaperones and the family back to the home where there would be a huge spread and a banquet. And these young women would form a procession because it is at night with a lamp to accompany. That was an important part of that welcome. So Jesus draws on an example they would have known very well. But he says there were five wise ones and five foolish ones. They all have their lamp. As you see in your worship bulletin, there's a picture of the kind of lamp that would be used. Little dish shape with a handle in which would be the oil and a wick sticking out. And they waited, but nobody knew exactly when the bridegroom would come. The text says he was a long time in coming, which is the prerogative. Maybe there were some last minute negotiations. I was reminded of this just very recently. The family whom we have been accompanying and sponsored, the Abu Nasr family, one of their sons is to be married. And Khalid, the father, was describing to me the different custom, how there were negotiations and conversations between the parents of his son and the parents of the bride-to-be. They could not speak to each other until the parents did and agreed upon what would be exchanged by way of gifts and make the arrangements and so forth. That is a custom that is still practiced today. And that is what was going on. Maybe there was some delay in the negotiations. Who knows? But the alarm is sounded at midnight and the groom arrives and the women are awakened, light their lamps, trim their wicks, light the lamps, but five realize they don't have enough. They don't have enough for that procession. They didn't bring any extra. The parable startles us a little bit. It's not quite what we expect. For when they are told by the other five, no, we can't share ours with you, because then there won't be enough. Then it would be a great disgrace, for there would be no lights to accompany the groom and his entourage. You go and buy some. And in the absent time, the groom arrives, enters the door, and closes it. And by the time they come, the door is closed, the party has started. And a rather shocking thing we're told. Sir, sir, Lord, Lord, let us in. I don't know you. What could this parable be saying to us? Let's look at a few features just briefly to reflect on what might be our inspiration as a community of faith and as individuals within this community of faith. Let us remember the context here. This is something, as I was preparing this week, that startled me. You know, in all the years that I've preached on this text, I didn't notice this connection. It shows you the Spirit can still teach an old dog new tricks. Don't you be calling me a dog, though. Just a turn of phrase, you understand. The context of this teaching takes place on the Mount of Olives. Now, I knew that. On the Mount of Olives. The interesting connection between that is the fact that the lamps are fueled by, guess what? Olive oil. Now, there's a significant connection here, I believe. Jesus has been teaching them all along the parables of watchfulness, of being prepared. And here, although this has been allegorized, there are symbols in that which he chooses. The wedding banquet has long been understood both in the First Testament, in the Old Testament, the New Testament, as that invitation to the life of faith, that invitation to feast on a life experiencing God daily. Come to the wedding banquet. Come and follow me, as it were. The oil is what was used in common day life, as well as for sacred purposes. The oil was used to heat and to cook. The oil was used to provide light. The oil was used for blessing and anointing. That oil was seminal and crucial to the life of the people of the culture. It was in abundance. There's no excuse for there to be a shortage of oil. It is poured out and plentiful. And the context on the Mount of Olives, they just have to look up and see the olive grove and the trees. Plenty of oil abounds. How do we know that it is so abundant? For at midnight when it is sounded and the bridegroom is coming, the five foolish ones are told to go and buy some. What kind of shops are open at midnight? They didn't have 7-Eleven or Dépanneur back then, did they? There was ample opportunity to find somewhere that you could get oil. There's no shortage. There's no excuse for a shortage. The oil represents, I believe, although many have suggested faith and love, Luther said it was faith, others have said it's love. I believe that the oil represents that power that enables relationship with God. And the power of the Word, the power of God's grace, the power that enables us indeed to shine, to pour out heat, to bless, to serve, to care. Jesus is saying there's ample opportunity and ample supply of that which the Spirit of God gives us to love and to care, to seek justice, to make peace, to come alongside those who are suffering, to lift up others, and to speak, to be emboldened to speak this faith and invite people to follow this path. So when the five are found to not have sufficient, it is not because it has not been provided, it is because they have been negligent. And I think that word speaks into our congregation and to the church as a whole. Jesus understands that there is a mixed community. Do you remember when he gave his commandment when he was leaving? And he said, go into the world and preach the gospel. Teach all that I have taught you. Just before he says that in Matthew 28, they came, gathered. Jesus came to him and it says, and the disciples fell down and worshipped him. And then this little phrase, but some doubted. Jesus has always recognized through the parable of the wheat and the tares that the community of faith is filled with a mixture of people. The question is, we have to be careful trying to single out who is who. Let the wheat and the tares grow together, but be sure there are a mixture in the congregation. And the challenge and the call I believe that Jesus is uttering to his disciples is that be vigilant. Be prepared. Encourage one another in order that all may be found to make use of what is plentifully available. The power and the grace and the faith and the love and the joy and the commitment necessary to live life in the interim. Because you do not know when the bridegroom will come. We do not know when Jesus will come again. In other words, the symbol for the establishment of the full reign of God on earth. We do not know when that will come, so live for the long haul. Prepare yourselves and gird up your loins, as it were, so that you are ready and constant. Now, none of us can live up to that or into that. That is why the community is the locus of this teaching. Because when there are times when we are weak and falling down and going astray, others in the community come around us with love and with correction, loving correction, and encouragement so that we can get back on track. I believe this is a powerful call indeed, because there's much that distracts us. You see, we often think in life that we have enough time to get around to it. Isn't that true? Yeah, I know we've been not speaking for a long time, Uncle Harry and I, but I'll get around to it. We'll make up one day. I know we're at odds with my sister or my children or my neighbor. We'll get around to it. There are important books to read. I'll get around to it. I really should work a little bit more on my spiritual life. I'll get around to it. We think we have time, but you and I know how quickly life can change. And we're filled with regret. The text also includes judgment, and we don't like judgment. We are so skittish about judgment that we fail to hear the instructiveness of this judgment. The judgment is understood not as a punishment for wrong, but as a liberation from what's wrong. Let me give an example. You and I probably know and have heard people say, been living their life and going along and everything seems smooth, and then all of a sudden, a heart attack. News of cancer or debilitating illness. Coming out on the other side, or not even on the other side of that, but through it, I have heard many people, and not everybody is able to say this, there's no condemnation of that, but I have heard a number of people say, that was the best thing that happened to me. I have never cared about my family and my loved ones more than I do now because of what I've been through. I have never realized how much love there is for me out there than when I have experienced this hardship. People have poured their lives out. They've made food. They've sent me jokes. They've visited. They've encouraged me. I didn't know so many people cared about me. I've been negligent about my relationships and friendships. I've been skeptical and cynical about life. And look here in my face and experience what has befallen me. It took this to make it so. Well, you see, in a sense, that experience is an experience of judgment and grace. The judgment comes about a lifestyle and about a cynicism and about a particular way of living that missed all that was already available, plentifully available. And so it's a judgment. It's not a condemnation, it is a judgment. The parable judges us as a community of faith. How are we failing to make use of the ample provision of God's Spirit and grace and resources to do the work, not only here is as we fellowship, but in the world? Because elsewhere in Matthew, he reminds of what is it that constitutes preparedness? What constitutes living as though we are vigilant? It is feeding the poor and the hungry. It is clothing those who are naked. It is going out and telling the faith, sharing the faith, making disciples, encouraging other people into faith. There's a long litany of ways in which we are to remain vigilant. It's not sitting down on our hands like if we're on some cloud listening to harp music. It's being active, but from a center and a source that empowers us from the very heart and spirit of God. The last thing that I want to lift up in this parable, for it is addressed to the community, Mount of Olives, there's ample abundance of God's Spirit and resources, spiritual resources. We are to be vigilant and prepared indeed to do those things that bless the world, that pour out blessing and anointing into the world and among each other. But notice also one of the disturbing things perhaps that assaults our sensibilities in the text. It is the five virgins that said no, the five wise ones, to the five foolish ones. Now they may say that's mean. One commentator talks about the catty women in this story, pitted against each other. Well, that may be in life, but I don't see it here. I see a very positive message that Jesus is lifting up. Again, we have to understand these things symbolically. And that is that we have permission in faith and in faithfulness to God in the way of Jesus to say no. Jesus said no three times to the tempter in the wilderness. Throw yourself down. Make these stones into bread. No. Jesus said no to those who said, come down off the cross. Save yourself. Jesus said no to his temptation not to go through with this in the Garden of Gethsemane. Sometimes our no is required in order that the yes of embracing God's purposes can flow and be realized. We are afraid of no because it looks impolite. It looks selfish in the context of this parable. But the permission to say no, we see, releases if we understand that the oil is the relationship with God, the intimate experience of God's favor and God's power to do that which we're called to do, then you can't share that. Every one of us in the context of this community of faith has to discover that personal relationship with God. We do it together in community, but individually we have to experience that. You can't borrow another person's experience. You may be inspired by it, you may be challenged by it, but you can't borrow it. You can't borrow your grandmother's faith. God has no grandchildren. Children, each with their own relationship to God. So the no is an invitation for those who have not yet or not fully embraced that relationship with God to say yes, to go to the source. What did they do? They went to buy some. But the parable also cautions us that if we wait to the last minute in our lives, that relationship might not be repaired. That commitment to work on yourself, on the bitterness, on the hatred, might not come in time. Who on their deathbed has wished that they did more laundry, spent more time at the office? What really matters? What is the source of our life? What is the ground of our purpose for being and loving and living? The no releases the yes. And then it seems as if the true question is not how well do we know God, but how well does God know us? For Jesus says, I don't know you. Now it's important to recognize the word know here. It's not just knowledge of. The word that is used, gnoito, is intimate acquaintance, intimate relationship with. So the question that the parable also addresses to us is, does Jesus know me? Does Jesus know you? Does Jesus have an intimate relationship with you? We hear you, Spirit. We hear you, Spirit. What do you have in your oil lamp? We hear you.